This podcast is brought to you by Men's Tee Clinic. Men's Tee Clinic is the team I trust with my total wellness optimization, and so should you. Five DFW locations with North Frisco, El Dorado Parkway at Dallas North Tollway now open. Call 972-GO-MEN'S-TEE or visit menstclinic.com.
KNC Masterpiece right here on 105.3 of the Fan. What was the biggest deal from last night? 877-881-1053. Was it the Mavs winning? Was it the Stars winning? Or was it the Rangers needing a new closer? What do you think was the biggest deal? 877-881-1053, franklinfirm.com, text line. You want to get involved. Also want to hear from you on the Twitch, on the YouTube.
I think I have the most important answer to your question, Kevin. And that is, it was not the Mavs winning, and it was not the Stars winning. Okay. It was definitely the Rangers situation.
All right, let's fire off cut number four then. This is what Corey wants you to hear this morning.
The pitch is swung on. There's a drive to deep left center field. That is way back, and that ball is gone. Home run number three of the night for Shea Langeliers. He has put the Athletics in front 4-3.
How about that for the local product, huh? From Keller. For the Arlington A's growing up.
I can't say I'm super pumped for him.
Now he's on the Oakland A's.
Why not?
Because went to Baylor. We lost.
That's really cool, though, that the local kid did
it.
You
no!
Know?
No!
I mean, if anybody's going to hit three home runs, it needs to be a local kid.
Yeah.
Like when Bobby Witt Jr. comes here, are you hoping he breaks the record of Shea Langeliers
and
hits four?
No, I'm not. Are you?
I do have a lot of Bobby Witt Jr. cards.
What if Shea's family's listening right now?
And they are.
And they're like, I used to like Kevin.
I'm glad. I'm glad that your son's awesome at baseball. I wish it did not come against the Rangers. That feels like a reasonable take.
Just one game.
Yeah, man. It's not like we're on a losing streak.
You are
won the World Series.
On a losing streak. That's true.
But you told me, Kevin, we did a segment that we held for almost a month called What's Your Favorite Part About Defending the Title? And you said that no matter what happens, I can absorb anything with we won the title.
That is
true. You
can
absorb any loss. We've lost two straight to the Houston Astros and now one to the A's. That's three straight losses.
I guess I did not anticipate. I thought this was going to come to a head against Astros fans.
And
I'd be
okay.
Like, yeah, we won the title. I didn't think that one A's fan was going to be like, ha ha, you lost last night.
There are a lot of A's fans there. They are all from Keller, I think.
The reason I say this, though, Kevin, is because I don't think the game against Charlotte last night, like, in the grand scheme of things, you needed it. But that was one of those three that I was looking at down the stretch here that I was like, that's an easy game. That's an easy win
right there.
So I expected the Mavericks to do that. Luka made sure. He was assertive early. He was hot early. And he was like, guys, I don't really want to play this game. We'll get into more of that conversation a little later on where I think that's going. And then the Stars, like, okay, they came back and won. They needed that win. But I think the Rangers' place here is we have a real problem. It is a real problem. And it needs we got to find a solution at some point. But here's the thing. We said this last year all year. Bochy is really good at figuring out bullpens.
True.
He will figure it out at some point.
There was a fan. During the post-game show, we go to commercial, and I would say he probably enjoyed a few beverages at the game. And he was like, Bochy never does good after winning the World Series. And he was like, really? Like, and I was like, hey, because we were at commercial, and there was nobody around. And I was like, the Rangers blew more games last year than any team in the history of baseball that went over 500.
Yep.
Like, literally, we're repeating the exact same thing that Leclerc did last year, Hernandez did last year early in the year. Like, literally, somehow they went 40-20, and I can't tell you out of the first 20 losses how many were blown saves. But I'm going to guess, and this might be too high, 50% of the 20 losses were blown saves. They might have been 50-10 if they would have saved every possible game to start the year. I don't know what it is with the Rangers. I don't know why the history of the Rangers for a decade now is whoever the closer is out of spring training struggles to start the season, to hold on to the job, and you have to start making adjustments. So I do think the Rangers are going to need to make an adjustment right now, and they're going to have to use a committee of closers.
Yeah,
I don't think this is fixable, my opinion. And Boch knows Leclerc and Robertson and Yates. Those are your three candidates right now because Spores is hurt. he will understand how to possibly use those guys way better than I would. But I do think you're going to have to now make an adjustment starting tonight. If it's a 1, 2, or 3-run game, I do think you're going to have to make an adjustment and take Leclerc out of that pressure situation of the ninth inning and move him to earlier in the game. And then, you know what? 2 weeks from now, maybe Leclerc's your closer again. It's not the ideal situation. You do not want this situation, but the Rangers just proved last year they had 4 closers.
Yes.
And with 4 closers during the season, going into the playoffs, you didn't feel good about your 8th, 9th inning situation. You won the World Series.
And when Bruce Bochy says you don't panic, I definitely agree with that. But I don't think making an adjustment like this is necessarily panicking. But I do want to ask him that because he might be like, I disagree. I think that is panicking. We're going to leave him right where he is. And I'll be like, okay, well, you've won a lot of World Series. I trust you.
Yeah, and, you know, he has good conversation. He's always fair with us when we have talks
with him, too.
From the 806, that's why I'm surprised and kind of disappointed Chris Young didn't do more to address the bullpen issues. I trust him and Bochy to fix it, but should have been addressed better in the offseason. They got a bunch of pitchers with experience that have done the job before, like with Yates and with Robertson. They added some arms to it. Actually, the more we got into it, I was like, man. And there we have the Urenas
or Arena.
We have in Yuri Rodriguez. We have guys that can potentially do it. They just got to figure that out too. And then you got to find that right mix of it, because I don't think anybody expected Spores would be the guy he was in the playoffs.
Right.
So it maybe.
I guess I was kind of hoping for that, but you're right.
Well, no. I mean, last year.
Yeah.
This year, because last year I had no clue what to expect from Spores. This year I was hoping, okay, we've turned the corner, we're on our way, but maybe there is one of those things where he's working with somebody else that we don't know about that's going to eventually turn into that. Maybe it's all the mind games, Kevin. Maybe it's mind games that he's playing with all of them.
Look, I do think that Robertson and Yates could address that need. So going after if you're saying because you didn't get Josh Hader, like I understand that, but take a look at how that started. I do think in Robertson and Yates, you have viable candidates. And I, Mike, like you, I am very interested to see when they get an opportunity. Because I believe it's a matter of when and not if.
Yes, I'm with you. I believe the same thing. I don't know exactly. They're going to have to figure something out now, but they can't make a trade. I remember last year. I mean, I feel like I'm having the same conversation again, and I hope we have all the same conversations, and I hope on November 1st I'm opening up candy while Jared Sandler's crying because we won another World Series. But I feel like I'm having the same conversation with us, which, because it's similar, and then I'm going to have the same conversation with fans. No, you can't trade for a closer today. That they're not available.
Sure.
I mean,
without just getting destroyed in the value.
The fastest you could trade for one last year, the Rangers did when they got Aroldis Chapman, and Will Smith was doing great at the time. They just needed depth and a just in case. And then he ended up closing some games, and then he ended up not being able to do it. And then they went back to Leclerc, and he was able to figure it out in the end. So the Rangers are going to have to go through this. Chris Young is going to have to go through this again. I do think he did as much as he could in the offseason. He did have a limited budget.
Yeah.
Based off of the TV situation that the Rangers are dealing with, he had a limited budget on what he could do. Yates and Robertson have been awesome. Yeah. Now, I get Robertson gave up a solo home run to tie the game last night.
He was really frustrated with himself in the post.
But he came in with first and third, 2 outs, and got a big strikeout to keep the game where it's at. Then he did give up a solo home run. But so far, Yates and Robertson pretty much can't pitch better than you can pitch. So those have been two very good pickups. And I do think now they're going to be asked to close some games as Leclerc gets back into his groove. And I think he will. I've seen it before. Somehow he goes to a lesser role, throws 3 games where he puts up zeros.
Right.
His ERA goes down to 2.5. Jared Sandler tweets it out. And then he goes back to a closer's role and starts doing pretty good. And then he goes on a streak where it's not good. And then he goes back to the role of 6th, 7th inning, then does great, then goes back to the closer role. Like, this is his career.
Just to hammer home the statistical side of what you were saying about Robertson and Yates. Yates has allowed 1 hit, no runs in his 4 innings pitched early in the season. And then Robertson, that was his first mistake. in five games as a Ranger. He had been mistake free since then. And so you are talking about like almost nine innings of we gave up this run.
I'm going to disagree, though, with Corey. I actually had the order of stars because it looks like they're going to get the one seed in their division. And then and conference too, right? Because they'll have a better record than the other division. So they're going to get, the ice on their side in Dallas for the playoffs. So ice. I say that's one because we're coming to a close there. Two, I had the Mavs because they're in the real playoffs. They did it. They made the real playoffs. And because there's 151 games left with the Rangers, I felt like there is an issue with the Rangers right now. But there's 151 games to get to where the Stars and the Mavs are. So I'm very proud of where the Stars and Mavs, what they've done here for the last month.
See, I think I fell in with the Stars on this as well because I realized the Mavericks clinched the real playoff spot and the Stars didn't technically clinch anything last night, but they did get really, really, really close. That's and they great. Had another come from behind victory. And so they're on the precipice of whether it's the now surging Winnipeg Jets or Colorado. They're almost to the point where they're going to outlast both of them. They're in a really good position to end up with more points than Vancouver. And like Mike said, take home ice for all of the Western Conference playoffs. And yesterday was a big step against a team that you should have beaten, but the come from behind nature of it made it fun.
Yeah, I guess that's just kind of the, I guess every team should have beaten the teams they played against yesterday, right? Should beat Charlotte.
Agree with that.
Yeah, so all those were should have beaten, and I guess maybe I'm just connected to the team that has the most recent championship.
And Buffalo was probably, I guess, the best of the bunch, and they're not that great.
Yeah, so that's where I was on that. But man, yeah, I was a little concerned to start things off in that game, but then all of a sudden the Stars they just are in a good place right now. They're in a good mental headspace. We have some cuts from Craig Ludwig that we'll play here at 11 o'clock that I think are really interesting. But they're in a really good headspace and health space at the moment too.
Man, and that game ended up way different than I thought it was going to, because within the first, I think the combined first nine shots, there were three goals given up. And it just looked like, oh dear, we're in for a track meet. And then that was it. That was it for Buffalo. They scored twice on their first five shots. And we'd been talking so much about how well Ottinger had played and everything. And I was like, man, this is not the start that you're going to look for. And I realized that offense, maybe across the board, was sluggish after that in terms of even getting shots on goal in this game. But no more giving up for Ottinger. That is eight straight wins. That is a career high for him.
Okay, I wanted to ask you your thoughts on the importance of eight straight wins and that being a career high for him. Do you think he thinks about that? Do you think that's in his mind at all? Or do you think that that's just a guy that's just riding a hot streak?
I might be in the minority on this. I think it does, because he had come back from injury before the All-Star break, right? And he looked at times kind of clunky going into the All-Star break. Then coming out of the All-Star break, you're like, okay, hold on, here we go. And it looks like you built up some momentum. And then towards the end of February, you hit a tough spot again.
Oh, no.
That's pretty much what it felt like. And so I think I don't know if he's like thinking about the eight straight necessarily as much as he's like, I'm stacking on, you know, quality start after quality start after quality start. So maybe not necessarily the win part of it, but quality start after quality start after quality start. I realize if you want to argue about the Colorado game, but they scored all the goals in the world to win that one.
You know what? I'm gonna text Turco and see kind of what his thoughts are on something like that, because the goalies are a lot like pitchers, right? Where they're weird, they're off their own little thing all the time. You ever watch soccer goalies? And like their workouts are 1,000 times more difficult and physical than the guys who are actually running around kicking the ball, getting all the glory, because they're having to get beat up because soccer guys dive on, you know, for balls and all that stuff. So I am kind of curious.
They have big gloves.
Yeah, big, huge Mickey Mouse mitts and stuff like that.
So catch the ball. Yeah. Stop batting it.
I'll ask Marty what his thoughts are on when you're in a hot streak as a netminder.
And part of that hot streak, with the exception of the Colorado game, all of the seven others, he has given up, Ottinger, that is, has given up two or fewer goals and had a save percentage of 905 or better. And that's, you're going to need
good.
Lot. Yes. the save percentage could still be a little bit better. But giving up two or fewer goals because of the stingy defense in front of you as well, that'll work every single time. We're the KNC Masterpiece right here on 105 Through the Fan. Coming up next, from the conspiratorial mind of Corey Majors and LaDainian Tomlinson, has your boss ever been out to get you? 877-881-1053. We'll do that next on The Fan. KNC Masterpiece back here on 105.3 The Fan. Now, this segment has been brought to us and constructed by Mr. Corey Majors. We're going to get to the point of, has your boss ever been out to get you?
Yes.
Obviously, spittle. I think, well, I wasn't going to say him.
Oh.
But I think the answer is yes for me. How did we get to this point?
Of wondering if our boss is out to get us or not?
Not this boss. But just ever, if you've had a boss out to get you, why did you talk to LaDainian Tomlinson and he led you in this
direction?
I
did not talk with LaDainian Tomlinson. Okay. This is Ryan Clark's. Is this his podcast, The Pivot, or is the pivot just it's Ryan Clark's podcast, The Pivot. And I think he has some really good stuff. LaDainian Tomlinson is an interesting character, man. One of the best running backs we've gotten to see.
Sure.
And to hear him, he's talking about a very specific game where he's like, how did that happen? And then this guy gets this opportunity afterwards. So he's talking about, I think it's Cam Cameron, who was the offensive coordinator for them at the time.
And this was the year they went 14-2 and lost to the Patriots.
They were a fantastic team. And granted, a lot of times when you play the Patriots in the playoffs, you walk away from it going, something. Sure. There's conspiracy around everything, right? But I think this is a really interesting approach from LaDainian Tomlinson.
Let's dive a little deeper into that, okay?
You went from Marty.
Because, you know,
Marty,
we've had time to process it and think about certain things.
You went from Marty to North Turner.
But remember, who's the offense coordinator? You guys remember at that time? Cam Cameron.
Oh, don't say that.
Did he not get, what job did he get right after we lost?
He came and be my head coach, and that is terrible.
So in my mind, did we just throw the game for a head coaching job?
Ooh.
So you
say, let's finish now. If we lose now, I get to go take my interviews. I get to go take a job.
You play football a certain way if you're up by 11, mm-hmm. or if you're up in the second half, Freddie T, what we doing?
Tote that thing.
We toting that thing.
Yep.
How do I not get the ball?
Lorenzo said, Lo'Neal said, that if you'd have got it more in the second half, y'all win the game.
And that's why I said we have all had a chance to think about this stuff, process it. And the fact that, you know, someone gets it right after we lose. Guys, I appreciate everything. You know, you guys play hard for me. I'm going to take this Miami job. What?
That is a tough thing. Not tough for Cameron, right?
Sure.
He gets to go be a head coach now. This is, as you listen to that, they believe they have the game sewn up. And this goes back to also Bill Callahan against John Gruden in the Super Bowl. Tim Brown came on our air, Kevin, when we were a night show, and he was like, hey, I still believe to this day, we threw out our entire game plan, and we knew we were this kind of team, and then all of a sudden we're like, let's run the ball. And it changed everything, and we lose the Super Bowl to these guys?
I think about that with the 28-3 Super Bowl, but I don't necessarily have the link of then this person took this job or got a hush money payment from the Patriots.
Yeah, so. And the Bill Callahan thing, obviously, is he coached with Gruden. He was friends with him, and he got to him somehow. This one is, a coach gets a job. Kevin, I will connect this to Dan Quinn. 877,
you think he did that last year?
877-881-1053. Text in.
Oh, my God.
I want to see how many people out
there. I do not agree.
Because I saw it on Twitter. I've seen it on our fan text. How many people think that Dan Quinn went into that game against Green Bay and was like, I'm going to go be a head coach somewhere else. I don't need to focus on Green
Bay. It's not zero.
Thank you. Thank you, Rachel.
I am not in agreement with that, but I do think you're right.
I'm not saying.
I'm with you, Kevin, but it's not zero.
You're right. You're right about that.
I'm not saying it was.
Did McCarthy do the same thing on offense?
They were pretty poor there too. Well, he already had a head coaching job, so
So why did he put up 0 points until it was 27-0 and call interceptions?
Yeah, maybe he was hoping that his defense could really could be better and stop him. But that's what? Yeah. Hey man, okay. they had been playing games where their defense
has been really good,
early in the early in games was keeping them in it, and then they were able to figure it out second quarter, second half. So I'm saying that's not my feeling, but a lot of people were very frustrated because Dan Quinn was just like it. He just threw the papers up in the air and was like, "I'm done. I'm out of here, guys. It's time." So this is LaDainian Tomlinson played in the game, Mike. He thinks that his own coach called a bad game plan and then left him.
I understand that it can happen. Ooh. Obviously, there's a lot of Cowboys that feel like after a few weeks into, I forget which season it was, that Jason Garrett decided to hold back tremendously, knowing that if this keeps going this way, Wade Phillips is gone and I'm the head coach.
Right.
And it worked out that way for him. I don't know if it's true or not. I've always hated the
coaches can interview for jobs before the Super Bowl's done. And I understand the whole process of you got to start building your team. You got to start getting that situated and everything. Dan Quinn took, 8 months to figure out if he was going to get a head coaching job, though. Right. So I really do think there is a loose connection here. But
man, and somebody threw out, what about when Avery Johnson was like, I know we won 67 games, but let's go small.
Yeah. Well, that is a weird one. But though I've never really liked that, hey, yes, we can start interviewing coaches and not only it be a distraction all week for them while they're getting their game plans together for whoever the opponent is, we can go ahead and interview coaches and make up the mind that, yeah, they're going to be coaches for us, and either I'm going to replace my coordinator this week or I have to expect that he's going to be focused all week on the game plan because that's just what coaches do. I would always say wait till the offseason, but this is LaDainian Tomlinson sitting back going, hold on.
Man.
After really thinking about this, we just abandoned what we were really good at, and that was running the ball late in games with a big lead, and we could have won that game and done something different.
Reggie, you said the answer was not zero. It is definitively not zero from the 2-1-0. Dan Quinn sure rage quit that playoff game. Why was Donovan Wilson playing single high from the 8-1-7? I do believe Quinn had already quit, but so did DeMarcus Lawrence because he was tired. From the 8-1-7, that's why Dan Quinn ran zone D against. Man, I had no idea.
Again, everybody did say.
I don't think that.
Everybody did say that Dan Quinn, and Dan Quinn admits, he did things differently in that game than he did all season. They changed some things up because they thought the way they matched up with Green Bay would be helpful with what he was going to run.
The first drive, 12 play, 75 yards. There was a big penalty there, I believe, by Deron Bland to keep the situation alive. That was horrible defense. I will give horrible defense to start the game. Then Dak Prescott throws a pass to CeeDee Lamb, and they're all yelling at each other to start the game off to punt. Then you get 6 plays, 28 yards, you get Green Bay to punt. So in that situation, I guess our defensive coordinator decided to play defense. Then Dan Quinn said, you know, it would be great here to tell Dak Prescott to throw it to the other team to give them like a 19-yard field. So 3 plays, 19 yards after Dak throws them a touchdown pretty much. So Dak threw them the next 7 points.
Defense could have stopped him.
I mean,
offense only gave up one touchdown.
I would say looking at this, I would just looking at the plays, I would say that McCarthy and Dak were the ones throwing the games more than Dan Quinn.
So this spawned off into another conversation. Have you ever felt like your boss was out to get you?
Mm-hmm.
I immediately thought of something in the newspaper, and when it unfolded, I was like, you can't be serious, right? I had gone to, it was either the Toyota factory in Plano or it was like a Lexus of some, it was like some car dealership place. And because Travis Pastrana was going to be there
from Red Bull.
And so we're going to do a story about that because he's in Plano and all that good stuff. While it was happening, the PR person came up to me and was like, hey, the vice president of the entire Toyota company is here from Tokyo. Would you like to speak with him? I was like, yeah, I feel like, why would you not take that opportunity? He was second in command of all of Toyota, was here from Japan. And so I talked to him.
Did you panic? Are you like, how do I greet him?
Did you just ask if I
Japanic? No, I did not ask
I'm just making sure that you did not panic. Say that.
Because I would have been like, how do I greet him? How do we talk?
He was very nice. Okay. And no, we didn't. There was no translator or anything. He was like all over it.
That's awesome.
He was super nice. And I was like, you must be worth lots and lots of money.
They have cufflinks.
I don't remember that. Probably, but I don't remember. So
I said hi to Jim Crane yesterday. Not the other day, but.
Did he have cufflinks?
He was dressed. He had a nice navy blazer on. It's like that's classic, right? You wear a navy blazer with whatever.
You're probably good. You're looking good. Jeans. Yeah. So I got the story, went back to the office, which was not too far away, and I like ran into our editor's office and I was like, hey, I just talked to the vice president of Toyota about the expansion and all the things. And she goes, why didn't you tell me? And I was like, so yeah, it just happened. And she goes, are you trying to show me up?
Oh,
and
my gosh.
And I was like, what is happening right now? And she goes, how come you didn't tell me about this ahead of time? I go, I had no idea. I went there for Travis Pastrana. And then they said, hey, would you like to talk to this guy? And I thought, well, that feels like a no-brainer.
Yeah.
And then she was pissed at me because she thought I had somehow planned this all out. I don't know why. To take her job that I didn't want?
That's right.
Is this the same editor that we had to
get?
Yes. Okay.
Yeah. Yes.
She was
kind of paranoid.
She was kind of paranoid anyway. So, Reggie, I wouldn't.
So she said I sandbagged her by setting up. Yeah, I called
Toyota.
How dare
you get a great interview?
Yeah, I called Toyota and I was like, hey, are you going to be sending your vice president over here anytime soon?
I'm not showing up.
Yeah. Yes? Okay. Don't tell my editor.
That is impressive. I was working before I left to pursue this avenue. I had been offered a job to manage the crew, the entire technical crew that I was working with. So I was already running the network for the company and building all these massive printers and servers and stuff. And then I was asked to come be the guy that ran the whole thing. And I was like, well, I'm 22 and I don't really quite know how to manage people. And I don't know if I want all that like on my plate, and the salary's probably not good enough anyway. And so I said, but this dude right here, he's really good. Like he's does all his work. He's got a couple kids and all this. I was like, he's perfect for this job. And then he started micromanaging me whenever he got the job. And I was like, okay, I don't like being working for this guy. And
sounds like you sabotaged.
I sabotaged
there.
Myself. But then once he started like staring over my shoulder and I was like, I am literally working right now. I was like, that's when I've had enough. I felt like he was out for me. So I left after that. And so that's good for me. That's very different than the guy that came up to me and was like, what are you going to do when your little radio show calls?
Ooh.
And I was like, well, I'm going to make it number one in middays.
Like it's working out.
That's what I'm going to do, buddy.
From the 214, holy cow, this is a very extreme story, man. From the 214, like I said, my boss was trying to sleep with my girlfriend at the time. She's my wife now. He ended up getting fired for it, and I got fired for putting him through a window.
Oh, my gosh.
I know the sorrow that comes along with window-related firings. It wasn't because of that, but holy cow, that is intense.
And please, nobody out there take the clip of Mike saying that that McCarthy and Dak were intentionally throwing that game. That was a very small portion of a joke that Mike was saying.
It's what those people
do.
It's what their life is about. Their life is about that. It's interesting that they've made their life about that, but that's what they do.
From the 817, my old boss at Sam's Club would write me up for not being able to count. But when I would ask to see the error, they would say, oh, we already filed it.
See?
You can't show it to you.
Boss is out to
get
you. Boss is always out to get you.
Yeah.
Can you trust your boss is the big question of the day.
What percentage of people do you think trust their boss?
35? That is a good question.
85?
877-881-1053. Do you trust your boss, yes or no?
Okay.
And we'll take, based on what they say, we'll take that as the right percentage.
Will that impact if you trust your boss?
We'll send it to bossesofamerica.com and see if they can do something with it. I bet Reggie's going to go look and see if that's available
website.
Right now.
You know me too well.
We're the KNC Masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan. Always looking for new domain names, I guess. Coming up next, it's time for Baseball Nuggets with Mike Bassick.
Well, the number one prospect is up. How will that affect the Rangers next?
KNC Masterpiece back here on 105.3 The Fan right now. It's time for Baseball Nuggets with Mike Bassick.
Okay, so I'm going to start off with last night's game, and I know we discussed it in the first segment. But I'm going to go to a player that I want the Rangers to do everything possible to trade for, and that's Mason Miller, the closer for the Oakland Athletics. It ain't going to happen today. It's not going to happen in the month of April. It's not going to happen in the month of May. Here's my thinking here. Oakland is nowhere close to competing for a division or a playoff spot. They're 3 years away, maybe less, but probably at least 3 years away from, and they're going to be playing in Sacramento for the next few years after this is over. What's the point of having a dude who has the best stuff in all of baseball closing out 30 games a year when you're winning 60 to max 75 games? So this is what the Rangers did with, I guess you could say, Emmanuel Clase. Maybe there was a little bit of, like, maybe we could be good trading for Corey Kluber going into the 2020 season. COVID happened, and it just, that was at that point the Rangers realized we're not close, and we gotta do something way different than what we're doing. The Rangers also traded Pete Fairbanks, and they said, what's the point? We're not winning anything. Yeah. So we have a dude throwing 100 miles an hour who has 5 years of control. Well, bullpens don't matter too much when you're rebuilding. You got to get position players and starting pitching better before bullpens really matter. So the Rangers traded Pete Fairbanks for Nick Solak. Now, this guy's way better, and I'm going to be honest. He's way better than Pete Fairbanks. This was some of the best. Like, Emmanuel Clase, I feel like over the last few years, has maybe had the best stuff in the American League as a closer. This guy is better. So if I'm Chris Young, I'm suggesting right now, not being part of the front office or anything, you need to figure out how to get Mason Miller to be your closer for the Texas Rangers for the next 5 years. Because budget, you're limited.
Yeah.
You're not developing dudes like Mason Miller. I don't know why, but you're not. And he was a third-round pick out of Gardner-Webb University and played for a few other Waynesburg University. Just to be honest, this goes a little bit into what Justin Verlander was saying yesterday. He didn't even get drafted out of high school.
Yeah.
This is the weird thing about, let's just say, college basketball just ended. If you're not good by 20 years old, like you don't show your skill to play in the NBA, it's almost like you're finished.
Yeah.
And in a weird way, if you're Latin, if you're from Venezuela, Dominican Republic, a lot of times if you're not showing a lot of value between ages 15 and 19 years old, it's kind of over. Oh, it's really, isn't it weird that
so young.
For, I'm going to say Americans, they have this path of going to a small college or a junior college, and then at the age of 21 or 22, really progressing. There's a lot of progression that can happen. They don't really give that progression to Latin players. It seems like, now Blanco, right? They're like, signing him at 22 is like signing an American at like 26 years old. Like, it just doesn't happen. By 22, like, we already found all the Latin Americans that we want to play affiliated baseball. Mm-hmm. The rest of you can kind of play Dominican baseball if you want. There's no money over there, and you got to figure out something else, because we decided at 18 or 19 years old you just weren't good enough to be in affiliated baseball. But I'm looking at this Mason Miller kid, and I'm like, look, if we can't develop Mason Millers, a dude who's throwing 101 with an unbelievable breaking ball, and it was one game, his command was perfect. Like, it was perfection. He threw two fastballs perfectly inside to Walsh and to Evan Carter to be like, you have no chance.
Yeah.
Like, you literally, if you swing at this, you can't put this ball in play hard. I'm going to break your bat, or you get the bat head out so far in front, you hit the ball foul by a million miles. And I'm like, and then he's throwing backdoor breaking balls and stuff.
That break on the bottom right-hand corner that almost could have been strike three against Evan Carter, I was like, man, that's a damn good pitch. Strike or not, that was a really good pitch.
So I don't know in June what you have to offer, but I'm offering a lot for Mason Miller. I was looking at what he did last year. I called up Sandler about this, and he had similar thoughts Miller.
About a quick question then. I was curious, Mark Church not potentially fill that role, you think, because he doesn't throw hard enough?
Yes, but I will say this. It's early, and I agree with what Bruce Bochy. It's a headline on MLB.com. Look, we are so early into this season.
Yeah.
There's other closers having issues in
baseball.
There's other good relief pitchers having issues in baseball. I'm wondering, and I'm not seeing Mark Church throw in AAA. Like, I'm not going back and watching Round Rock baseball nine-inning games.
Yeah.
But I wonder if we're getting close to possibly a switch of Brock Burke and Mark Church.
Okay.
So if you're asking me, could Mark Church help? Maybe so. Maybe not as the closer immediately this year. But could there be a switch in the month of April where they decide to switch Burke's role to like, hey, you need to go down and work on your stuff, work on consistency, work on location,
yeah.
And then Mark Church. We don't know. You're an unknown in the major leagues. Let's see if you can really help us out. Okay. But I think with Mason Miller, I do think that this is a team that's going to lose 90 to 100 games. Oakland might be better than I think. But when I say better than I think, like not lose 110 yeah. games or 100, they might only lose 90 games.
Right.
But I look at him and I go, I'm asking this question. What's the point of him being in Oakland the next 3 years?
Yeah, no, I 100% understand your point and I agree with it.
Last year he did start. I don't know if you trade for him and after a year or two go, let's throw him back into a starter's role. But to me, if you have a dude, the Rangers' issues for a decade now with closing baseball games yeah. makes me think, if I can trade for a dude that I know, as long as he's healthy, can close for the next 5 years and I don't have an issue with the ninth inning role, like that's something I want. Because David Robertson, we talked about it earlier, and Kirby Yates are off to great starts. Yes. They're closer to 40 than yes. they are 30. They're
Robertson
not.
Robertson might be 39.
They're not long-term solutions. Yeah. They are short-term, short-contract solutions. Leclerc's on a one-year deal. He's not like on a long-term deal either. So I look at what you have in the future of your pen, and maybe you just keep doing 1 to 3 year deals with older veteran guys and figure out how to piece it together for the next 3 years. You have a championship lineup. It's proven. Your lineup, your position players are a championship team. Evaldi's pitching. Yesterday, he didn't even pitch great, and he pitched 5 2/3 and gave up 3 hits and 1 run. That's him being a little bit off.
Yeah, you could kind of see it, too. There were a couple times where I saw him make a pitch, and he'd tap his toe, and that's kind of his sign. Yeah. I don't know if you noticed that, but he felt like he wasn't perfect, you know, where yeah. he needs to be. But, yeah,
you're and he right. talked after the game. He was rushing. He was just and this is obviously we're about to get to the Masters. And I would say hitting a golf ball and pitching a ball and hitting the ball are similar. If everything's not on time, you're going to be off. And it's amazing. The best in the world you're going to see hit the ball into a tree, hit the ball into an area that they were like, the last thing you wanted to do was hit the ball in that area as a golfer. And these are the best in the world. And all it was a tenth of a timing was off on something, and it caused that. And all it takes from Nate Evaldi talking about it last night, all it takes is just my upper body just barely in front by a tenth of a second over where I'm supposed to be, and I throw a ball. And for Jose Leclerc right now, I do think it's mental first, mechanical second at this point, because I saw it last night after he gave up the home run, he threw 2 really nice sequences and got guys out. Now, I will give him credit for this. He didn't quit on the game. You still needed to get those outs to get your team back into the dugout only down by 1. I will say this. If you're only down by 1 against the Oakland Athletics in the ninth inning, the game's over.
Yeah.
I'd like to say that. Mason Miller is shutting you down. Yeah. So if you are losing tonight and Mason Miller comes in the game, I would like to put this out there. The game is over.
Woo.
You ain't hitting him. That is when I saw Emmanuel Clase for the first time, and then talking, I remember Sandy Alomar Jr. and stuff, and it was like, this is unhittable. Now, Emmanuel Clase has become hittable throughout his career. Nobody's perfect. I saw Billy Wagner when I was with Philadelphia in spring training. I was like, I don't know how a human being ever hits this person. I literally don't know how a human being ever hits what he's throwing up there. And it happens. And so somebody will eventually hit Mason Miller, and he has given up 6 hits this year. I would like to go watch those and go, how in the world did anybody do this? Because that was phenomenal last night, what I saw. It's a new day today for the Texas Rangers. They do need to win this series. So you have 2 games to win this series,
yeah.
and you need to win both of them. You can only win 1 today. It's not the end of the world if you don't, but you just look at the series coming up. Detroit's playing pretty good baseball. Atlanta's one of the best teams in baseball. You won't have to face Spencer Strider. He's not going to be available, but you start looking at these games and you just don't want to give too many away. And then that being said, I don't know. They gave away 50% of games they should have won out of their 72 losses. 30 of them were very winnable games in the eighth and ninth inning, and they gave them away. So they were able to win the World Series by giving away games last year more than anybody in the history of baseball who's ever been over 500 has done it. Like, literally, I'm not exaggerating. No team in the history of baseball gave away more late inning leads than the Texas Rangers and actually played 82 and 80 baseball or better. And so, for, I don't know, I guess they did it last year, so the players can come to the clubhouse today and go, I don't know, we did it last year for 162 games and figured it out, so let's just do it again.
It did sound like whenever things were going a certain way, Bochy and his crew would go have meetings. Like it didn't sound like they were always had the real serious meetings, but whenever things needed to be fixed, they'd have real conversations with each other and come up with solutions. So I'll just trust that part of it for now.
It'll be interesting tonight. My last question here for Baseball Nuggets. If you get to the sixth inning and Cody Bradford's done, and let's just say the score is 4-2, you're winning 4-2. You give me your order of the seventh, eighth, and ninth inning tonight.
I go Leclerc, Yates, Robertson.
I feel like I'm in that same boat, except for I'm probably throwing Tavares in there, Kevin, because I'm unlike you, I'm trying to keep him around. So I'm still trying to figure
Leody
out.
Leody Tavares?
Yeah, he's got a great arm. But yeah, I'm probably with Kevin on that. The serious note would be that's probably the
Yates
group.
Has looked great in the eighth, so I kind of don't want to move that.
And if Leclerc can't handle the sixth, then I got an even bigger problem on my hands.
I'm with you guys.
Yeah.
For now. But I do think Boch is going to have to, for the first 3 months of the year, have to rotate these guys into who's hot and who's not.
We're the KNC Masterpiece right here on 105 Through the Fan. Coming up next, puck around and find out. Another day, another comeback win for the Stars. Let's discuss next on the Fan.